to this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Happy Friday night, everybody. My name is Drew. That man in there is my co-host, Schmitty.
Hey, hey.
What's going on, man?
Living the dream, brother. How you doing?
This week is ending, so I am pleased. It's been a long week. A long week. So, very excited to be here on this Friday night.
You know what? I think you are going to be excited. I don't know if you're...
Oh, I know what's going on. I've seen the rundown of the show today. I'm incredibly excited for
good.
All the shenanigans.
Good. I'm glad you're excited. We should probably tell the audience so that they're excited as well.
Well, they're already... I mean, Beercast is on. They're already excited.
We've got Modest here. We've got Tyler and Jake. They're going to talk about the latest beer releases and special event they're having this weekend. A little bit of wrestling happening at Modest.
Yeah.
It's happening at Modest this Saturday.
Yeah, a lot of wrestling is happening.
A lot of wrestling. Thank you. Forgot to turn the mic on.
That's all right. You'll get the hang of this before the end.
I got
of the
you. Show.
I'm already drunk.
I got you back in here.
And we've got Anthony from Bent Brew Stillery. How you doing, Anthony?
Great. Just stretching my legs over here on an end of town I don't generally get to, so this should be a good time.
And we've got Brandon Sass going to talk about an Iron Bartender and maybe some Lawless Distillery as well. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Thanks for taking the trip, man. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Tyler and Jake. Talk about Modest and some wrestling. How you boys doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, doing real good.
So tell us about... The wrestling and maybe a little bit of the beer too. Tell us about the event, because I know Drew is excited.
I'm very excited. I got word of this event. What was it, yesterday? John shot me a text and told me what's going on. I said, you got to come on the Beercast and talk about this.
If you just heard about it yesterday, my marketing is failing.
Well, and apparently John's failing too, because he's not here.
Yeah, right. He had to go to the Harry Potter Orchestra tonight.
There's a Harry Potter Orchestra?
Yeah.
He should be mocked soundly for that.
Hey. He's got a pregnant wife, and the wife wanted to go. So, pregnant
respect.
Wife. Yeah. Happy life.
Yeah, that's
whatever
his fault.
The phrase
yeah.
is. Well,
I will mock him. I don't care what you guys say. So tell us about the wrestling. It's your Olympic style wrestling? What's the story?
Some of these guys probably could have been Olympians if they wanted to. Some of these ladies as well. But no, this is professional wrestling. This is an Olympic or amateur. It's being put on by the Academy School of Professional Wrestling, which is run by Mr. Ken Anderson, famous of WWE and TNA fame. And we are working with the National Wrestling Alliance, and they are borrowing us their, or lending us rather, their champions for this event. We have Nick Aldis, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. We have Allison Kay, the Women's NWA Champion. And then we also have, WWE superstars like Hornswoggle, Mr. Kennedy, as I said, the Nasty Boys, Al Snow. It's a very stacked lineup with international and local talent from the Academy as well.
That's a legacy rundown of stars there.
We're very lucky. We talked to a lot of other wrestlers as well. It was a lot of planning. And the interesting thing about planning a wrestling event is it's always subject to change, because you'll have someone booked and then they have four or five shows that week. And, of course, they get injured. You have to find someone else. So it's a big balancing act of trying to figure out who's exactly going to be available. But what we landed on is a pretty stacked card, and we're very, very excited about it.
Well, that's kind of always the card subject to change is always the
you got to keep that in there.
As someone who keeps track of not just WWE wrestling, but a lot of the indies and the other promotions as well, this is a great card. I mean, this is a fantastic card for an event like this, and I'm excited because the wrestling scene in the Twin Cities feels like it's really gaining some steam and gaining some momentum and getting some attention, and we're getting some really decent and good quality names coming through.
Absolutely. I mean, and you hit on it. Wrestling's never been more exciting with all the new promotions doing well, like AEW. And as I said before we started the show, the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, has been doing this weekly YouTube show called NWA Power, and it's been getting international rave reviews.
It's good.
It's very, very good.
It's a good show.
They promoted our show on this last week's episode, which was amazing.
I haven't watched this week's yet.
I have not as well, and I'm very, very excited to see what happens, even though I kind of already know.
Well, it should be a really, I mean, if you're into match quality, that main event, Aldis and is going to be fantastic. Aldis and Brandon Gore. Ken Anderson's always been a really fun act, really super entertaining, great charisma, great on the mic, so that'll be a lot of fun.
He really deserves a lot of credit for putting this card together.
Oh, yeah?
He's got a great reputation in the locker room with a lot of the professionals out there. That's why we're able to get such big names. I mean, Nasty Boys were reaching out to us to be a part of this event originally. Wow. And this is a perfect example of card subject to change. Brian Knobs of the Nasty Boys has been dealing with some pretty serious injuries, and we thought we had them, and then they had to drop out. But then he actually had a pretty quick recovery where he could still be a part of the show, and we were able to put them back on. But I think you just need to come and see what happens.
Well, I heard that he dropped out, but then a beer was made, so he decided to jump back in.
Isn't that funny?
Tell us about the beer side of the equation, Tyler.
Yeah, definitely. So we reached out to them and tried to make a beer with them, and they were all for it.
So this can is amazing. You guys made a Nasty Boys beer, which I might be the only instance of a beer being named Nasty that makes me want to drink it.
Right.
But this is brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, so we just took what they looked like in their heyday. They literally threw paint on shirts and on sunglasses and wore that and were crazy. And we just emulated the label just like that.
they are some handsome fellas. That is for sure.
That's the one way to describe it.
How did the collaboration come about? Did they fly in for the brew day? Did you talk to them about what they wanted out of a beer? How did the beer, the Nasty Boys beer, happen?
We just talked to them and figured out what they liked and what they didn't like and kind of play to our strengths as well as Modest Brewing.
So what do they like? What's in this beer?
So this is a super crushable beer. Think False Pattern, but a little bit more juicy, a little bit more flavorful.
So for folks that haven't had False Pattern, what's the style and the flavor components?
So it's a New England Pale Ale, heavy juice, citrus, orange. I get a little bit of strawberry almost in there. But overall, it's just a solid, easy drinking, smooth, heavy wheat bill. So it doesn't bite at all. Just nice, easy, smooth drinking.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that this beer is going to be available at the event.
Yep.
Nice. Very fun. How many tickets are sold for the event? Is it sold out already? Can folks still get tickets? And what's the time and how long is it going to run?
Tickets are still available. There's still some VIP tickets. As of before I got here, there's 4 tickets left for VIP.
Ooh.
So that gets you 2 free beers, gets you in an hour early, meet and greet, autograph, poster, and then normal tickets, $25, gets you a free beer still. Normal thing, and you can go in there, wrestle, and
is there a chance if I get there early enough, do I get front row seats? Are those reserved for VIPs? Is there a chance that
VIPs?
Is ODB is there a chance ODB might get over the guardrail and land in my lap, is what I'm asking.
There's always a good chance of that happening. She goes all out in pretty much every match. I know she's very excited to be a part of this event, and the fact that she gets a championship match out of it as well. She's been promoting it very heavily on her social media, which has been fun to see. The event, the doors open at 6 p.m., and the first bell is at 7 p.m., and it will be over right around 10. And then what are the taproom hours? Tyler, you would know more about that.
Taproom hours, normal hours. We're open until midnight on Saturday. So.
That's a good stretch of wrestling and entertainment. You get a good bang for your buck. Enjoy a couple beverages and watch some
high quality wrestling.
Yeah, and some really recognizable names. You guys have done a great job with the booking. Are you going to have any great matches? Is there going to be a big blue cage dropped at any point over the ring? Or are you going to have any?
There's a ladder match.
Yeah, no cage this time, but ladder for sure. There's going to be the first ever Academy belt is being fought for, and it's going to be a ladder match. So it's going to be pretty intense.
So what goes into the planning of a ladder match?
Well, can I explain this match? Because it's actually kind of a new idea concept that we wanted to play around with. Because part of the reason...
Hang on. Yeah, we are up against the clock, so let's take our first break.
Oh, okay.
And we will tease that, and we will talk about the ladder match and all the rest of the great stuff we've got going on with our guests from Bent, and Lawless, and more coming up on the Minnesota BeerCast. Stick around. Welcome back to the Minnesota BeerCast, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Quick reminder, you can catch up on any past shows by getting the iHeartRadio app, going to the Minnesota BeerCast channel. We've got our own channel on there. Just go to the podcast tab, search Minnesota BeerCast. You can also find my other show, the morning show I do here on the station. It's Justice and Drew. You can catch up on episodes of that as well. They're both, it's all amazing. It's all good. It's all great. It's incredible. I don't know why you wouldn't listen to all of it.
It is. It's just incredible.
Thanks.
That was
a wrestling.
That was a wrestling pun.
Wrestling tie in there.
Thanks.
Nicely done.
I'm a much.
We should book him for the next show.
Right.
He's great.
I'm a much more casual fan than you are. You are a rabid fan.
I'm into it. You know, I grew up with it. I grew up in Miami, and my dad used to take me to all the WWF shows and NWA shows down there. I watched, seen, you know, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair live a number of times, Hogan and Piper and those matches. So yeah, that's what I grew up with. And then I kind of fell off it and as I entered adulthood. But then when my son got to be about, I don't know, let me say about 7 or 8 years old, he discovered it,
yeah,
and he liked it. So it became something that we've, you know, we've just always watched together ever since then.
You know, my parents never took me to a wrestling match, but I also had like 3 brothers. And so if they would have taken me to a wrestling match, they would have had to have taken all of us to a wrestling match.
Yeah.
And it's kind of pandemonium. Like I understand why they never did. We had to watch all of our wrestling, you know, like Saturday morning and you know, that type of thing. And I really enjoyed wrestling, especially as a kid. And I kind of, you know, fell off a little bit and then really got back into it, like the Monday Night Wars and Nitro versus Raw. And
yeah, that was a good time.
Really got into it, camped out overnight when SummerSlam was here and got some great tickets for that. And then I my interest kind of waned for a while, and I kind of got back into it, and I watched casually, not as much as I used to back in the day. There's a lot more programming available now than there used to be.
It's a great time to be a wrestling fan right
now.
Sure
is.
It's a fantastic time to be a wrestling fan. Not only do you have, you know, WWE, of course, you know, the big behemoth of an organization, a global billion-dollar company. Now they're on the Fox Network on Friday nights. But you've got new promotions, like you mentioned earlier, AEW just started, and they're putting on fantastic shows. NJPW New Japan is incredibly accessible. And available in the United States if you want to get into that style. It's an amazing style. And I mean, TNA and NWA and indie promotions all over the country. There's no shortage of good quality wrestling out there right now.
What's kind of the difference, between those different organizations? Is it style? Is it presentation? Is it for the average, you know, wrestling fan, or for the person who wants to get in, maybe, you know, who was in love with, you know, wrestling as a kid, you know, like I was, and wants to come back and revisit the magic of their childhood? What is the difference between those different promotions, and what might people enjoy from each segment of those?
My goodness, that's such a big
question. That's a really tough question to answer.
That's what I'm here. I ask the tough questions.
Well, you know, if you don't mind, I'll jump in. But I mean,
go for it.
It's all different styles. And if you're a wrestling fan, you know, I'd encourage you to try to consume as many different promotions as you can, because they're all putting on different style shows, different styles of wrestling, and you'll end up finding, you know, what's resonating, what's working with you. Like if you want quote unquote realism, you know, and you want like matches that appear like hard hitting without
why do you do the quote thing? Are you trying to say that wrestling's not real?
It's, you know, there's some predetermined aspects to it, perhaps. I would recommend New Japan. You know, there's not a lot of flamboyance, and it's treated more like a sport.
Well, they definitely take stiffer shots over in Japan as well.
Yeah, they like elbowing each other in the face a lot.
Like for real.
They're really into that.
Fun.
Yeah, you know. And then you got, you know, your traditional sort of WWE style, which I think most American wrestling consumers, that's what they consider to be, you know, mm-hmm. the wrestling style, if that's what you're into. AEW's putting on a different type of product that seems to be more focused on high spots, big moves, you know, every match is full of drama, and every match, like, anybody could win any match. There's not, like, squash matches or anything like that. So there's something out there for everybody right now.
So what does, and maybe you can help with this, Jake, but what is the approach with, you know, Mr. Anderson and the academy? Do they try to train to a certain style? Do they try to give students the ability to go to any of those promotions? How do they cope with that?
Well, man, I wish Ken was here. He could talk a lot better about how he does things. But I mean, I trained there for about 7 months, and there's all kinds of, I mean, the range of athleticism of the people who attend the academy. I mean, you look at wrestling today. There's not a certain physique you need to have anymore in order to be a wrestler. And so Ken's really good at getting the most out of people and meeting them where they're at and pushing them to make themselves better. Certainly there's kids that come to the academy that are just genetic freaks of nature. And two of them are on this bill, the Flip Bros. These guys are brothers. I believe their ages are 21 and 20. It might be 20 and 19. It's young, but when they jump in the air, they decide when they're going to come back down. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how athletic these two are. And they're having a non-title match for the NWA Tag Team Championships against Thomas Latimer and Royce Isaacs, which is going to be a fantastic match. Ken Anderson wasn't flipping around and defying the laws of gravity, but he was still able to teach these kids the art of telling a story while in the ring, which is really what wrestling's about. It's not mm-hmm. just about the display of athleticism. It's not just about the spectacle. Hopefully you're engaged somewhat emotionally, where you're able to suspend your disbelief. And that's how a wrestling fan looks at wrestling, is being able to suspend their disbelief enough where they forget that maybe it's choreographed.
So I've heard tale of, you know, the old school wrestling schools, right, where if someone's interested in becoming a wrestler, you know, first you have to kind of get smartened up to the business, and you know, you might go to an academy or a trainer, and somebody, you know, puts you through your paces to make sure you're really interested in being involved in the wrestling industry. It might make you, you know, run up and down, you know, steps and do all kinds of stuff and blow you up. Is what is it like nowadays if someone is, you know, interested, a young guy or gal who's really in love with the idea of being a professional wrestler? Does the academy take all comers? Is there some sort of vetting process? If someone's interested in making that their future, how does that happen?
And is 47 too old to start?
No. The answer is no. Never too old. And, you know, Ken trains referees, managers. It's not just people who are looking to become wrestlers to get into the industry. But yeah, he meets people where they're at. There's not like a physical you need to pass to get in there. But that said, he's very realistic with where people's skills are at. If you can't do a simple somersault, well, then he's not going to be working on, you know, body slams with you, because you got to get the basics down first. And some people are quick learners, some people are not. But that's why he's such a great teacher. Is he's mm-hmm. patient. He genuinely cares about his students. He's very passionate about seeing growth from each one of them, and it's very, very obvious he has a lot of love for his students.
We did leave off in the last segment talking about your inaugural Academy Championship, the Battle Royal Ladder Match. Want to give you a chance to tell everybody what that's about.
Yes, I'm going to try to explain this as best as I can. I'm very excited for this match, just because I'm friends with a lot of the athletes, the performers, wrestlers that are going to be in this match, and the fact that it's going to be the first time there's going to be an Academy champion. And so part of this event is not just displaying NWA talent and, you know, international superstars and local talent, but also just the Academy talent, just to show the folks what Ken's able to do with a lot of these students. So this is a Battle Royal Ladder Match. It's going to have 12 wrestlers in it. Once it gets down, so everyone knows what a Battle Royal is. In order to get eliminated from a Battle Royal, everyone starts in the ring at the same time the bell rings, and the only way to get eliminated is to be thrown over the top rope and having both feet touch the floor. This match, that's still the case, but once it gets down to four wrestlers, that's when it becomes a ladder match. The belt will be hanging above the ring. In order to win the match, you have to climb a ladder to go get the belt. The wrestler who's able to do that, it will be the inaugural Academy champion.
That sounds painful.
It's going to be insane. And just knowing some of the athletes that are in this match, I cannot wait to see what they've come up with. I can't wait to see who wins. It's going to be incredibly entertaining, and I think it could be the show stealer.
Is there an odds-on favorite for the first inaugural Academy champion?
No. and I mean that because there's I don't know, and I just knowing the wrestlers that are in that match, I don't want to give too much away, but they're some of the best that have come out of the Academy and some of the best that are in the current local scene. There's honestly about five or six different wrestlers that could possibly win this match.
Tyler, is the winner of the championship going to celebrate with a Lord Humongous? That's my next question.
Ooh, that's a really good question. That'd be a tough one to celebrate with.
Because that's my segue into the next topic. You've got some Lord Humongous that you brought to talk about.
Yeah, we got three variants that were unveiling the morning of the wrestling event.
Well, let's pause and tease the variants and come back after this and talk about those in the next segment. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Hit up our social media outlets, MinnesotaBeerCast.com. You can find all the links. Let us know what types of topics and beers and breweries and things you'd like to see and hear on upcoming shows. And we are a traveling show, so we will hit the road if you'd like us to come visit your establishment, do a show from there. That is always an option.
As a matter of fact, we've got some news on that very topic
coming up shortly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but let's put that on the back burner for just a minute. In the break, we were poured a delicious beer by Tyler from Modest. Tell us about this beer, Tyler.
Yeah, so this is Lord Humongous. This is barrel-aged Lord Humongous.
It smells amazing.
We did three variants of it. The one that you guys have is marshmallow and vanilla.
Oh, that's why it's so awesome. Yeah.
So, like, this past year, we've been, like, honing in our pastry stouts. And so we kind of took that and moved it into the barrel-aged realm.
Holy moly.
So just copious amounts of marshmallow and vanilla that cost way too much money.
Yeah, so is this like legit marshmallow that goes in here?
Yeah.
Or is it just like sugar?
It's legit marshmallows.
Like
just opening up the jars of Kraft marshmallow. Like,
no, like the squares, like formed ones, just throw it into the fermenter or the bright tank, wherever it is at the moment, and just let it sit there for a while until
it's
until they dissolve
into
nothingness.
Yeah. So when is this going to be released into the wild?
Saturday, right before the wrestling event.
Doesn't sound chaotic at all.
No, it's going to be easy. We have like six beers coming out that day. It's going to be
nice, cakewalk. Easy, calm, relaxing Saturday. You know, you've got ODB, the Nasty Boys, and three variants of Lord Humongous.
Yeah.
Not a big thing. Nah.
Yeah, and Lord Humongous is going to be there. He's going to be roaming around.
I want to see him do a run-in.
He is going to be part of the wrestling event in some way. We don't know how it's going to happen yet, but
he's going to be under the ring with the swoggle.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's going to be.
They're going to come out.
He's demanded front row seat.
He's going to get fed grapes the entire time. Lord Humongous.
So tell us about the other two variants here. We've ate up a bunch of the show talking about wrestling. I feel like we've neglected beer, but we should definitely talk about the other variants before we get on to vent stuff.
Yeah, let's get back to it. And so the one that we're drinking right now, it was aged in bourbon barrels. And then the next one that we have is in the yellow label. It's coconut, macadamia nut, and vanilla. That was aged in rye barrels. Wow. This one we just bottled today, so I haven't even had a chance to try it yet. So from what I'm hearing from the production crew, it's pretty great.
I'm glad we didn't open that one, because I cannot have macadamia nuts.
Ooh. Played that one, right?
Right. And the other one, is that just a original OG, or is that still a variant as well?
Another variant. Yeah, we don't have any OG this time around. So this one, it's aged in a maple bourbon barrel. So it had bourbon in it, and then it had maple in it, and then it came to us. Then we put cocoa nibs, coffee, more maple, and then vanilla.
I like it.
Yeah.
So do folks age the this beer, or do folks generally open it up right away?
People usually buy two at a time. They'll try one right away and then age one for however long they want to. Honestly, it's ready to go right now.
Well, that's, in my opinion, that's the way, you know.
This is very drinkable now, but I'd probably put one on my shelf at home for a little while.
I'd be interested to see how that coffee in that beer holds up. In my experience, it's tough to have coffee and a beer stand up too long. But, you know, have one now, and then maybe in January when you reach the deep, dark, cold depths of a Minnesota winter, it's time to crack open one of these bad boys, and whether the coffee is there or not, I guarantee it's still going to be decent to drink.
Yeah, oh yeah. They're all going to age really well. I mean, they're 11.8%, so they'll stay shelf stable for at least 2 years before they start.
It'll be good for what ails you.
Yeah.
So let's. Speaking of big bad dark beers, Anthony, Bentbush Distillery does Dark Father every year, right?
Dark Father is getting ready to release here on Halloween, the 31st. We're doing a big promotional night, which we do a big costume contest. We'll have full on cocktails, so you'll not only be able to get your Dark Father, but you'll be able to get different liquor drinks as well. So we'll have several different cocktails using all of our Bentbush Distillery spirits. Like I said, a costume contest. We'll have different variants from years past of the Dark Father. We'll be putting out our new variant this year, and I can say that the little secret in it is it was aged in port barrels.
Ooh.
So that, it's going to be very tasty.
How difficult is it to get your hands on some port barrels? Did you go straight to the source? Did you go through like a third-party vendor? I imagine there's not a ton of port barrels available. Maybe I'm mistaken.
We work with a lot of different wineries throughout Minnesota and whatnot, and Wisconsin, as well as have different vendors that will bring us special barrels to do different variants, assuming they get a case off of the beer later on.
Very fun. So what kind of costume do I have to show up in to win? It's difficult to know. I mean, you know, you got to compete with your... You know, you're sexy witches, and, you know, it's difficult for a big white guy to come with a costume that really can take home the gold.
We had a big white guy win, I think it was 2 years ago, that actually had a big, he was, like, literally dressed up like a Viking, like, really huge dude with this 300-pound shield, the whole nine, like, real sword, like, came in there, and he took the contest. But nobody could even carry a shield but him. I mean, a literal, like, Viking dude. Just huge.
Jake, you look like you had an idea.
Well, I was going to say, why don't you just try dressing up as a sexy witch?
Right.
hey, that's my idea. You
know, I was thinking...
At least you put it out there. I wasn't going to tell him to do it, but hey.
Maybe the witch or the librarian, right? I'll come in just, you know, with the glasses on and my hair in a bun, and then towards the end of the night, the glasses come off and I shake the bun out and
start showing a little leg. The question then is, do you shave leg or not?
It works in the movies.
Just
every
the
time.
Bottom quarter.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There it is.
Schmitty's secret is though. Schmitty's secret is he uses his back hair to make the bun.
Right.
So when he shakes it out, it's.
We did actually have a guy that dressed up as one of our characters, the Nick from one of our stouts. It was actually one of our regulars around the tap room dressed up as this gal from our beer.
Oh, wow.
And actually made a better woman than the guy. Everybody's like, well, you make a hot woman.
Oh, wow. So what night is the costume party? Because folks are going to want to see my back hair bun.
That is on Halloween.
Halloween so, night yeah, proper.
Halloween.
Nice. Yep. I love it. And we've got another date to announce. We're going to have the fourth annual chili cook-off at Bentbush Distillery, December 8th. We've nailed down a date and a location. It's gonna be a hell of a good time.
Yeah, these chili cook-offs have always been a lot of fun, and everybody leaves full and everybody leaves happy, and there's always some really, really great chilies to try there. So I'm excited to not only enjoy all the chilies, but to beat Schmitty yet again.
Yet again.
Rumor has it that Bartley's gonna have a secret recipe chili, so he's gonna have the chili of chilies at this one too.
Ooh,
so
nice. Good.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
I might be throwing him under the bus a little bit just because he went to the Vikings game tonight and sent me in here instead. But hey, that's what happens.
Now, if you're hosting, you are obligated to bring a chili. That's just
how right. That's how it works, right? That's kind of the way I've always understood a chili cook-off. So yeah.
You have to bring a chili, and you have to provide Drew and Schmitty all the beer they can drink.
Right. Well,
those are the rules.
Exactly. Well, make sure you get the special treatment with whatever else ails you as well. Exactly. You know, back in the back.
Exactly.
And when it comes to all we can drink a lot.
I wouldn't. We'll fit right in around there anyway because we all drink a lot.
We've got you brought some other beers with you today, especially like the Maroon and Bold. Let's talk about those. Tell me.
I did. We just released last Friday. We just released our Maroon and Bold, our annual one. This is, I believe, like the 8th year on this one now. This one is a 100% Minnesota grown ingredients. Hops actually started, mainly just from the University of Minnesota's ag department every year's, excess harvest. Mm-hmm. Poor decisions would actually use in the recipe. Mm-hmm. And then it got carried over since Kristen England is our head brewer over at Bent.
Right.
It's his recipe. So this one still gets made every year. And then staying true to it, it is a bigger batch now. So he still gets, hops and stuff like that from Mighty Axe and different other, Minnesota growers. So it is still 100% Minnesota grown, which is why we even go as far as to call our double IPA the original Minnesota double invigorately passive aggressive ale.
Is there a can of that floating around over there?
There is. There's cans of it floating all over the place. Here's even another one over there. Basically, yeah, it encompasses all that is the fall, all the way down to those little slight roasty marshmallow notes that you're going to be getting as you sit around the campfire at the end of the fall evening.
How difficult is it to get Minnesota malt? I know, you know, hops are probably not as difficult as they once were, but the malt aspect has always intrigued me, and the concept of, you know, terroir as it relates to the maltier side of brewing.
So I know Kristen has a lot of his secrets on where he gets things and who he goes through and stuff like that that we're not all privy to. Mm-hmm. So he just says, don't worry, I have my ways.
So we have to trust Kristen on this.
Right, exactly. When a guy's been doing it as long as he has, he doesn't reveal his secrets. It's kind of like Minnesota fishermen. They never reveal their holes, you know?
Oh. That's the All right. I was going to make a joke, but I'm going to save it. Very good. Well, we are up against the break. We're going to come back and talk with Iron Bartender Brandon Sass is going to tell us all about Iron Bartender and maybe his award-winning cocktail. We'll come back after this. You're listening to Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Final segment of this week's episode. Always sad news to hear that the show is wrapping up, but it's been a really fun one. Appreciate all our guests coming in and bringing your really, really tasty beers. That Lord Humongous, I gotta say, that is fantastic. That is one of my favorite special releases every year.
Just wait, we've not only do we have tasty beers, but we've got tasty cocktails.
Even better. I'm gonna Uber home after this.
I like that we've started to get more and more into cocktails these days. I like that we're diversifying our palates a little bit, Drew.
Mm-hmm. Diversifying our palates and our content.
It's all about balance,
right? Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you about making a good or maybe enjoying a good cocktail is what makes a good cocktail, Brandon says.
I think that it's really about balance, and I think that you know, everyone at the table can agree that that's sort of a thing that you strive for when you're creating any alcoholic beverage. In the case of a cocktail, you know, you're dealing with a spirit, sugar, acid, and water, and finding the sweet spot of all those things is really what sets a great drink apart from a good drink.
So if I were to be at home with, I don't know, the components that are hanging out of my bar,
mm-hmm.
and I want to create a cocktail, and I don't necessarily have anything in mind, but I wanted to maybe kind of dabble around and maybe I have some rum, maybe I have some bitters, maybe I have, the, you know, shrubs, some simple syrup.
Sure.
Whatever. What do I want to do to create a well-balanced cocktail? Is there a method to the madness when it comes to making a good cocktail recipe?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think obviously you want to start with high quality ingredients that, you know, put your best foot forward in the beginning. But when it comes to creating a simple but delicious drink, I really think that water is the real golden key, and how much or how little. You know, if you don't have enough water, a cocktail will taste too sweet or too boozy. Mm-hmm. If you have too much water, it'll taste loose and sort of, you know, not composed. So really finding that sweet spot. And I think, you know, it's difficult because all things are created differently in terms of proof and the bricks of a sugar syrup, et cetera. But, you know, if you have about 1.25 to 1.5 ounces of water for your cocktail, depending on what it is, that's a pretty good place to start. And then, of course, you know, if it's got citrus, you should shake it to aerate the cocktail, give it some space. And if you're making an old fashioned, you know, giving it a proper stir, and honestly, tasting your drink throughout the process is probably one of the most important factors.
So one of the cocktails that I really enjoy is a Manhattan. What's your method to making a great Manhattan?
It's funny that you say that, because I always say that the Manhattan and the Martini are sort of the two classic styles that I toil over the most. I've been making drinks for 16 years, and I taste every single one probably 3 to 5 times throughout the process of making it, because there's really a very fine balance of all those ingredients. And I think of it much more like baking than cooking, where in cooking you can a dash of this, a dash of that, and kind of fly by the seat of your pants a little bit. But, you know, it's like the toothpick test. There's a place at which the cocktail is perfectly on, and there's an under and an over. And so for me, you know, I like 2 ounces of my spirit, 1 ounce of vermouth, 2 to 4 dashes of your favorite bitters, and, you know, fill your glass up with ice and stir it and taste it until it tastes right. Because, you know, in the case of a Manhattan, depending on how you like it, I like mine served up without ice. And so it needs to go in the glass perfect, because as it gets warmer, the dilution is going to feel looser.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I think it's important to, you're the last line of defense for your own drink, right? Like if you taste it right before it goes in the glass and you say, that's it, then you can guarantee that when you get to the couch, it's still good.
How'd you know I was drinking around the couch? You've been in my house. So tell us about Iron Bartender, because it sounds like you've got the credentials to be an Iron Bartender.
Iron Bartender is an amazing competition. You know, if you're familiar with Iron Chef, a lot of the same rules apply. There's a secret ingredient, and you have to incorporate that into a spirit that's chosen for you. And the rest is really up to you, and you have 8 minutes to do so. And that means you get the ingredient, and then you have 8 minutes to concept, build, garnish, serve 3 to 4 of those cocktails, depending on how many judges, in perfect form. And so it's a high-pressure situation, but it's incredibly fun, and you get to interact with other people in the community and show your stuff.
So it's been a series of competitions, and you've got the finals
right
on the 27th at the Poorhouse.
Indeed.
What time do things start?
The doors will open at 6:00, and the event will begin at 7:00. And I believe there will be a semifinal round, and then those of us who move on, there will be a final round after that.
I like how you already assumed those of us that move on.
Right. Well, we're looking for a second straight. we're looking for a second straight Iron Bartender Championship. We are currently the reigning champions of Iron Bartender, and
you need a belt. You need a championship belt.
You know, I've been asking for a belt all year.
Iron Bartender ladder match?
I was just going to say, is that a ladder in there somewhere?
I think that we would probably be able to hang in the ladder match.
We can work into the show.
All right, there's now 13 people in the Battle Royal ladder match. Right. Brandon has entered
one
himself.
One of them is a bartender.
Let's see what I can climb. Maybe I can climb.
I like this a lot. You got to put all your ancillary ingredients around the ring, but put the booze up on top
right.
of the ladder.
Exactly. You have to get the secret ingredient from the top of the ladder.
Honestly, I wanted to say, I appreciate the presentation, even though no one can see it. That's a beautiful looking cocktail you were just sipping over there. Maybe, I want one really bad.
Thank you so much.
I think cooties here.
That's maybe one thing that I left out when you asked, Schmitty, that really makes a great cocktail and sets things apart, is the presentation is often something, especially in a competition when you're limited on time, but in any sort of environment, when you presenting a drink in the most beautiful form is part of the memorable experience of it. The smell, the look, the taste, they all play into together. And I think, you know, we can all agree on that. I think the same is applied for beer and wine, et cetera.
So how much time do you have to make a cocktail? They say, yeah, you're making, you know, with, you know, vermouth, with vodka, with an olive, you're making this, you know, a cocktail. How much time do you have from conception, from ingredient to execution?
Well, during the competition, we have 8 minutes total. So they give us the ingredient and then it's off and running. And so, you know, we've competed at Lawless Distilling every year that we've been open since 2016, and we won last year. So myself and our head distiller, Jeff Fricke, we have a really good working relationship. He makes the booze. I do a lot of the drink concepting. So we, you know, he's sort of the chef and I'm sort of the cocktail maker. And so when we decide what we're doing right away, and then he goes and starts creating the secret ingredient, however we're going to utilize it. And I start working on the drink. And so we both kind of get to make the final decisions, but it's definitely a mutual experience.
Are there pitfalls to avoid when designing a cocktail with these type of ingredients? Are there, you know, missteps when it comes to, you know, not featuring the ingredients or just sticking to the same cocktails you always make? Or what are there things that you can really mess up?
I think, you know, the thing that I notice is, well, obviously not finishing is always a huge concern because you only have so much time, but leaving out the visual and aromatic concepts is definitely something that, you know, if you do have those things, they will set you ahead. And if you don't, it's not necessarily a mark against you, but it's not adding to your total. I think that for me, the biggest misstep is not considering all the factors. I mean, the judges, you know, they can be writers, they can be bartender or industry professionals. They're going to be looking for you. And I think for us too, because it's pretty rare to have two, you know, sequential championships. We're definitely, no one really wants us to win.
Well, after having the cocktail
you're
you
like
brought,
the Patriots of the Iron Bartender.
I want you to win. We're almost out of time. We got about a minute left. Tell us about the beneficiary.
Yeah, absolutely.
At Iron Bartender.
All the proceeds of the event go to No Kid Hungry to feed kids in the community. You know, 17% of kids in Minnesota struggle with hunger. And so every $10 raised can provide up to 100 meals. So it's a really important, but also, it's just a great way to see what's going on in the community and, to pit us against each other and, you know, have a lot of fun doing it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much to all our guests.